Thank you, Mr. Danes. Good afternoon, everyone. That got your attention, didn't it? It's meant to be a sound effect. It's meant to be a sound effect of metal hitting metal. A shovel makes a clanging sound as it breaks through to hit something solid buried below, the metal touching metal. A cry rings out, "We have found it!" The digging intensifies and the cover is exposed. People get down on their hands and knees and rub away the dirt, trying to get to the cover. They get to the outlines of the cover. They pull it apart. A collective shudder goes out through the whole group. The laborers are thinking that the archaeological find is finally going to be exposed and open. Some of the workers were fearing the worst and they flee in terror. And as the cover is removed and pulled back, the deep pit inside is exposed to the lightning flashes overhead. And a hissing sound wafts up from the bottom of the pit. The archaeologist leans over to the other and he says, and the other person says, "The floor, why is it moving?" The archaeologist takes the torch, throws it into the pit, and hundreds of snakes let out a collective hiss all at the same time. And the archaeologist turns over and says, "Snakes, why did it have to be snakes?" Does anyone know who said that and in what movie? Yes? Who said it? Indiana Jones, right? In what movie? Raiders of the Lost Ark. Raiders of the Lost Ark is a fictional account of an archaeologist named Indiana Jones. The entire movie is about seeking after one archaeological artifact. That artifact is the long-lost Ark of the Covenant. And the entire movie is spent in seeking that one item lost from antiquity. In archaeology today, many of the world's most famous artifacts have already been discovered, and some would say some of the most amazing discoveries have actually been made over the last 100 years. When you think about the things that we've discovered in the last 100 years, think about the Dead Sea Scrolls discovered in 1947. Think about the tomb of Tutankhamun in Egypt, discovered in 1922. The Mesopotamian city of Ur was discovered and excavated between 1922 and 1934. The Terracotta Army is more recent. The Terracotta Army in the tomb of Qin Shi Huang of China was discovered in the 1970s. Yet there's remaining one archaeological site that is basically almost wholly untouched. It's sitting there waiting for archaeologists to tap into it. And yet it's just sitting there silent. No one's digging. No one's excavating. No one's pulling out these archaeological treasures. It's just sitting there. Does anybody know where that might be? Any guesses? Jerusalem. That's right, Jerusalem. Where specifically in Jerusalem? The Temple Mount. Yep. The Temple Mount. The Temple Mount is a 37-acre plot of land in the center of the old city of Jerusalem, in the center of Jerusalem, in the center of the nation of Israel, in the center or the focal point of the earth. Jerusalem, city of peace. In my last sermon in Chattanooga, I covered this, the historical basis for Jerusalem as a holy and sacred city for Judaism, for Islam, and for Christianity. And I showed how Jerusalem will be a religious flashpoint and geopolitical center for end-time events. My purpose today is to examine and focus in further to examine that most holy plot of land, the Temple Mount, located in the most holy city in the world, Jerusalem, and its significance in Bible prophecy. The Temple Mount is only 0.00000002% of the face of the earth. That's just over 1/1,000,000,000th of the face of the earth is the Temple Mount in Jerusalem. Yet it's pivotal and center for end time events. So what is this area that we call the Temple Mount? We hear the word temple, but what's the Temple Mount and what does the Temple Mount mean? The Temple Mount is a man-made earthen platform that was built upon Mount Moriah. It was first built to provide a level base for the first temple. Then it was expanded to its present dimensions during the time of Herod the Great, just before the birth of Jesus. Has anybody in this room built a house? I don't mean swinging the hammer, but have you ever had a house built or seen a house built? One of the first things you do before you build is you prepare that foundation. And around here in Chattanooga, there aren't a lot of perfectly level pieces of earth. In fact, if you look, we come in the front door back there, which is at ground level. But if you look out the window over here, we're on the second story. That's because it drops off like this. The Temple Mount is similar to that in that the Temple Mount, before they could build, they had to build a level base. And so what they did was they built this structure, filled it in with earth and other materials to provide that level base upon which to build. First for the first temple, second for the second temple. There's a long history going back about the Temple Mount, all the way back to the time of the patriarchs. It's referred to in the time of Abraham in the Bible as Mount Moriah. We talked about Mount Moriah in my last sermon message here in Chattanooga. And I mentioned the fact that according to Jewish tradition, it was there on Mount Moriah that Abraham offered his son Isaac. And it's also interesting to note that according to Muslim tradition, that it was there on Mount Moriah that Abraham offered Ishmael, not Isaac, on Mount Moriah. Later, David brought the Ark of the Covenant and he placed it in the tabernacle of Moses on Mount Moriah. He planned the construction of the first temple, but he was not permitted to build it. His son, Solomon, built the first temple. He built it in a period of 7 years and completed it in 950 BC. The first temple geometrically resembled the tabernacle, though it was twice as large and built of immense quantities of stone, cedar wood, and lined with gold. After Solomon's death, the temple was repeatedly plundered, and over the next several hundred years, it was finally and completely destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar on the date, the 9th of Av, 587 BC. Nebuchadnezzar destroyed the temple and took the Jews into captivity. But then, just 46 years later, the second temple was begun from scratch, building from the ground up again by Zerubbabel, Nehemiah, Ezra, and the returning exiles from Babylon. It's completed in 516 BC, but it was modest in comparison with its predecessor. The second temple and the Temple Mount were enlarged by Herod the Great, beginning in 20 BC. Herod had recruited over 10,000 workers on this project. 1,000 of those workers were actually Levitical priests who had been trained as carpenters, because they were the only ones allowed to go into parts of the temple proper. Josephus gives some amazing, very vivid descriptions of the second temple and its surroundings. The Temple Mount platform more than doubled in size during Herod's rebuilding to 150,000 square meters, or about 37 acres. So this rebuilt second temple is sometimes referred erroneously as the third temple. This is not the third temple. It's actually the expanded second temple. And it's these images of the temple which are most commonly recreated today. The third temple actually refers to a temple which has yet to be built. In 70 AD, on the 9th of Av, yes, the exact same day of the year, the second temple was burned and destroyed by the Roman general Titus. It's interesting to note that both the first and the second temple were destroyed on the exact same day, the 9th of Av. Was it coincidence? No. In fact, Jesus prophesied of this destruction of the temple. Let's read the account in the book of Luke. Turn with me to the book of Luke, chapter 19 and verses 41 through 44. The book of Luke, chapter 19 and verses 41 through 44. Now as he drew near, this is Jesus, now as he drew near, he saw the city and wept over it, saying, If you had known, even you, especially in this your day, the things that make for your peace, but now they are hidden from your eyes. For the days will come upon you when your enemies will build an embankment around you, surround you, and close in on every side, and level you and your children within you to the ground, and they will not leave in you one stone upon another, because you did not know the time of your visitation. Turn also with me to the book of Matthew, chapter 24, verses 1 and 2. The book of Matthew, chapter 24, verses 1 and 2. Then Jesus went out and departed from the temple, and his disciples came to him to show him the buildings of the temple. And Jesus said to them, "Do you not see all these things? Assuredly, I say to you, not one stone shall be left here upon another that shall not be thrown down." Not one stone. And literally, not one stone was left upon another as the soldiers of Titus tore down and overturned every stone to get at the melted gold of the temple, which was burned during the Battle of Jerusalem in 70 AD. The Temple Mount later fell into the hands of the Muslims in the 7th century. The Dome of the Rock and the Al-Aqsa Mosque were built shortly thereafter. Other than a period of time of about 100 years, there was Christian control during the time of the Crusades, but that was almost 1,000 years ago. Other than that, the Temple Mount has been controlled and remained under Muslim control ever since that time. In 1967, the Israelis annexed the Temple Mount during the Six-Day War, but then Israel returned control back to the Muslim authorities, known as the Waqf, in an attempt to pacify their vanquished foes. That decision was also made partly due to the fact that most Orthodox Jews will not go onto the Temple Mount for fear of accidentally stepping on the Holy of Holies, the site of the Holy of Holies, since the exact location for them is in dispute. So Muslims consider Jerusalem and the Temple Mount specifically to be the third holiest shrine in Islam after Mecca and Medina. Muhammad was said to have made a mystical night flight on a winged horse to Jerusalem, aided by the angel Gabriel, and from there ascended a ladder to the throne of Allah. For Judaism, the Temple Mount is the holiest site on the face of the earth. Yet they are restricted from praying on the Temple Mount itself, and can only pray in the outside base of the Western Wall. Now, that Western Wall is not the temple. That Western Wall is a retaining wall. Now, you may see retaining walls all over in buildings and structures. Some people, as you come into their driveway, have a retaining wall. This is the retaining wall to the Temple Mount. This is not the temple. The temple is gone. There's not one stone left. Every stone was overturned from the temple. So their holiest site is simply the retaining wall of the Temple Mount. This is a, does anybody ever use Google Earth? You can use Google Earth to get satellite overhead images. And by the way, that's a good reason not to sunbathe on your roof, just as a side note. But Google Earth will take these satellite images, and they're surprisingly clear. This is actually a Google Earth satellite image of the Temple Mount. And you can see, in fact, this was one of, last night at Friday night dinner, we asked some questions, and one of the questions was, is the Temple Mount rectangular? And only one person in the group, way to go, Danny, said, no, it's not rectangular. It's, and he even knew what it was. He said, it's trapezoidal, right? So the Temple Mount is not rectangular. It looks somewhat rectangular. But if you look, the bottom, the southern exposure is actually shorter than the northern exposure, which is longer. So it's actually like a rectangle, but with differing length on this, on the different sides. So that gives you an aerial view, and you can see there are several different structures. There are even trees on the Temple Mount. The main structure you see there in the middle with the golden dome is the Dome of the Rock. The Dome of the Rock is called the Dome of the Rock because it is a dome over a rock. And if you go inside the Dome of the Rock, all you will see is that foundation stone rock, which actually sticks up above the bedrock, above the platform, and that's where Dome of the Rock is placed. Down toward the bottom is the Al-Aqsa Mosque, that gray building is, that you see toward the bottom of the screen. I'll show you a different angle. You can see it a little bit better here. You can see the Dome of the Rock. Here's another trivia question. Did the Dome of the Rock always have gold on it? I didn't know this answer, by the way. I had to look it up. I didn't know a lot of these answers. I had to look almost all of these answers up. The answer is no. And there are actually pictures of the Dome of the Rock without the golden dome. It was actually gilded gold by the then king of Jordan, who personally financed it with $8 million out of his own payments to gild it in gold. So we remember it as gold, but it's only in very recent history that the Dome of the Rock has had that golden dome. And then you can see the Al-Aqsa Mosque further down there in the bottom. And the Al-Aqsa Mosque actually extends all the way over to the Western Wall. So you see the Southwestern Wall corner right here. And then if you go up slightly, you can actually see the Jews gathering outside the Western or the Wailing Wall just outside the Temple Mount area. So to situate it within Jerusalem, the Temple Mount is situated in the old city of Jerusalem. And it's situated with the Jewish quarter on one side and the Muslim quarter on the other side. So this is a detailed map, and it gives you an idea of where all of the different structures are that are on the Temple Mount. You can see the Dome of the Rock in the middle, the Dome of the Chain just to the side of it. Actually looks like a mini Dome of the Rock was actually built, many believe, before the Dome of the Rock as the model for the Dome of the Rock. The Dome of the Ascension, the Dome of the Spirits, the Al-Aqsa Mosque, all of these buildings are Muslim. There are no Christian buildings on the Temple Mount. There are no Jewish buildings on the Temple Mount. They're all Muslim. It's interesting when you talk about the Dome of the Rock, and I'll go back to a slide of showing the Dome of the Rock. One of the questions I asked last night is, how many mosques are there on the Temple Mount? Most people would say one. The entire world recognizes that there is a mosque on the Temple Mount. The Al-Aqsa Mosque is clearly a mosque. Very few people would dispute the Al-Aqsa Mosque being a mosque. What's one of the requirements to be a mosque? It has to be pointing in a specific direction, doesn't it? It has to be pointing directly at Mecca. When I went to visit, I was on a business trip in India several years ago, got to see the Taj Mahal. And the Taj Mahal is an interesting building because it's also an Islamic structure. And I was there with somebody, I still remember his name. His name was Omar from Oman. And Omar was Muslim. And he was telling me about this area. And he was going to go in and say prayers in the mosque to the side of the Taj Mahal. I didn't know there was a mosque at the Taj Mahal. Next time you look at a picture of the Taj Mahal, look at it closely. There are two buildings flanking it, one on either side. So if you're facing the reflecting pool looking at the Taj Mahal, there's a building flanking left, a building flanking right. The building flanking left is a mosque. It faces Mecca. The building on the right is an exact carbon copy, symmetrical duplicate on the other side. But it's not a mosque. It was created for symmetry. Because when you look at the Taj Mahal, it's symmetrical. So everything was created with symmetry in mind. They wanted to put a mosque there. They had to put an anti-mosque, so to speak, on the other side just to fill that space and keep symmetry. But it's not a mosque. No one would argue that it's a mosque. So how many mosques are there on the Temple Mount? Well, recently, the Muslims would argue that Dome of the Rock is also a mosque. There are a couple of problems with that. The Dome of the Rock doesn't face Mecca. No prayers are offered at the Dome of the Rock. It doesn't fit the definition of a mosque. So why would they want to designate it a mosque? They know that by designating the Dome of the Rock as a mosque, that they can lay claim to the sanctity of the entire site. If all they claim is a mosque, is Al-Aqsa Mosque, then couldn't people say, well, we're going to come in and take out the Dome of the Rock because that's where we want to build? So by claiming that the Dome of the Rock is a mosque, it again puts that ability to say, you can't touch our mosque. And in addition, more recently, the controlling Muslim authorities have proclaimed the entire Temple Mount to be a huge outdoor mosque and holy only for Muslim believers. So if the Temple Mount is simply filled with Muslim structures, then why does it have such interest if everything on the platform, if everything on that surface is Muslim? Well, it's because of what may lie beneath the surface and what one day may be built above the surface on that platform. From an archaeology standpoint, locked away within the Temple Mount could be one of the greatest archaeological finds in the history of the world. Many people have speculated what might be locked away there in the Temple Mount. What might be there that we can't get at right now? There's a lot of speculation, no real answers. They can't answer it because they can't get access to the site. The Muslims will not allow any external excavation of the Temple Mount. But people have speculated on several different things. One of them is they speculate that it might contain the tabernacle of Moses. Remember, the tabernacle was disassembled when the first temple was built. Many believe that it was stored in a room under the first temple mount in Jerusalem, and there's some evidence to suggest that it may still be there today. Another thing people have speculated about is, where's the Ark of the Covenant? They think the Ark of the Covenant may be here. Well, there are problems with that, because like the tabernacle of Moses, the Ark of the Covenant has not been seen since the destruction of the first temple. Not the second temple, the first temple. The Ark of the Covenant was never in the second temple. So there are a lot of different theories. In fact, in my research, I think I counted 8 different theories of where the Ark of the Covenant may be. But the reality is no one really knows. It's all speculation. But some believe that it may have been there during the first destruction of the temple, hidden to protect it, and that it's still there, hidden among the rubble. A third thing that people have speculated about is the sacrificial altar. So out of all the different possible artifacts, this is the one that most likely is still there, buried in the Temple Mount. Josephus talks about the siege of Jerusalem and how it was still being used even up through and during the siege. Well, Jerusalem was surrounded during the siege. So when you think about war and you think about artifacts and precious things, we were, my son and I were in Europe, and we were touring a particular beautiful, beautiful museum in Dresden, Germany. Now, if you remember the name Dresden, most people remember Dresden, Germany for one thing. They remember that Dresden was carpet bombed and leveled to the ground. So how does this beautiful museum of beautiful artifacts exist? It's called the Green Room. How does it exist there in Dresden? Well, they knew that the armies were advancing. They took all of these beautiful artifacts. They got them out of the city, and they stored them in a safe location. This happened all over Europe. Different artifacts were taken out and put into safe storage. With the sacrificial altar, that probably did not happen. They didn't have time to get it out. It was recorded as still being used as Jerusalem was surrounded, and there's no record of it having been taken by Titus or any of his armies. In addition, there are probably numerous relics of the priestly duties of the temple, as well as some of the ornaments, decorations of the temple, perhaps even remnants of the torn veil which separated the Holy of Holies. But we may never know. Or will we? There's a very strong movement among Jewish, Christian, and even secular interest to archaeologically excavate the Temple Mount. And there's an even stronger Jewish movement pushing forward to build a third temple. Yes, a third temple. But there is an equally strong and perhaps even greater physical force of Muslims who resist any attempts by Jews or Christians which would in any way violate what they see as the sacred ground of the Temple Mount, which they refer to as Al-Haram al-Sharif, or the Noble Sanctuary. So as a counter to the Third Temple movement, there's a strong movement among Muslims to, quote, purify the Temple Mount of any Jewish influence. A fatwa, which is a religious ruling binding on Muslims, was issued by the Mufti Waqf in Jerusalem to lay claim to the entire Temple Mount area, Alam al-Sharif. The Waqf declared that it owns the treasures of the site to a depth of 7 stories below and a height of 7 stories above. Why? Because they want full and absolute control of the Temple Mount. And this fatwa was in direct response to the claims of the Jews that the Muslims are causing enormous damage to the antiquities of the Temple Mount. A group of Israelis petitioned the High Court of Justice in Israel to stop the destruction of the Temple Mount. The group said that 15,000 cubic meters of debris and earth had been hauled away from the Temple Mount and dumped in the Kidron Valley since 1999. There's a group that actually goes out and goes through that garbage, rubbish, rubble, dirt, and goes through it. It's a group called the Temple Mount Sifting Project. They're sifting through thousands of tons of fill, and they've already unearthed artifacts dating from both the First and Second Temple period, buried in the discarded dirt and rubble. Yet these Muslim excavations continue unabated even to today. From a pure archaeological standpoint, do you understand the problem with finding these artifacts in the rubble and the rubbish in the Kidron Valley? What's the first thing you do as an archaeologist when you discover a possible artifact? You record its location. Where did you find it? Where was it? Because many civilizations are built one on top of the other, on top of the other, on top of the other. And the only way you can accurately date and place something is where you found it in those layers. And here they're simply sifting through and finding things in piles. You'll often hear the term status quo being used when referenced to the Temple Mount. Most of the international community say they want to keep the status quo or the existing situation to remain as is, to remain unchanged. However, the Muslims have used status quo as a way to continue their excavations, saying that they have a right to build, rebuild, and excavate as part of the status quo, since they effectively control access to all the activities on the Temple Mount platform. In addition to attempting to remove signs of Jewish or Christian presence on the Temple Mount, the Waqf has also paved over some vast areas. Why? They're trying to seal the earth from any attempted future archaeological discoveries. So why are the Muslims doing this? It's simple. So they can claim Al-Haram al-Sharif has always been exclusively Muslim. If you remember back the Camp David talks back in 2000, and remember that it looked like they were going to have an agreement, and then suddenly they fell apart, and Yasser Arafat walked away. It seemed like there was going to be an agreement, and it didn't happen. One of the major reasons that didn't happen is because Yasser Arafat would not agree to the Jews having any sovereignty over the Temple Mount. Yasser Arafat, before he died, actually went on record as denying any existence of a Jewish temple on the Temple Mount. Well, there's a term for this. It's called temple denial. Denying that there was ever a Jewish temple on the Temple Mount. Arafat did say there was a Jewish temple. It just wasn't located there. It was located in Nablus, which is a city about 30 miles north of Jerusalem. And Sheikh Ikrimi Sabri, the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem from 1994 to 2006, stated, quote, "The temple was never there. There is not one bit of proof to establish that. We do not recognize that the Jews have any right to the wall or to 1 inch of the sanctuary. Jews are greedy to control our mosque. If they ever try to, it will be the end of Israel." End quote. It's important to note that that's not a quote from some fringe lunatic, but that's the Grand Mufti, the leader in setting policy for Jerusalem and the Temple Mount. And it reflects the views of much of the Muslim world. In a book entitled From Jerusalem to Mecca and Back, The Islamic Consolidation of Jerusalem, Yitzhak Ryder describes a growing tendency of Islamic authorities to deny the existence of the Jewish temples on the Temple Mount, characterizing it as part of a campaign to increase the status of Jerusalem and the Temple Mount in Islam as part of the effort to make Jerusalem a Muslim city under Arab governance. According to Ryder, this narrative, quote, "reflects the mainstream in many Islamic communities around the world and is promoted by religious figures, politicians, academics, and journalists," end quote. Dr. James Davila, professor of Jewish studies at St. Mary's College, criticized the increasing practice among journalists of writing as though the existence of the ancient Jewish temples on the Temple Mount was a disputable question with two legitimate competing narratives. According to Professor Davila, quote, reporters need to get it straight that there is no debate among specialists about the existence of the Iron Age Judean Temple and the Second and Herodian Temples in Jerusalem on the Temple Mount platform. Again, narratives to the contrary are propaganda, not scholarship. The claim by many Muslims that the idea of a Jewish temple is nothing more than a Jewish myth should also strike us, because if the temple is a Jewish myth, it's also a Christian myth. In addition to the numerous references to the temple in the Old Testament, the four Gospels of the New Testament mention the temple in Jerusalem over 60 times, including several references to Jesus being physically present at the temple. Turn with me to the book of Luke, chapter 2, verse 46. Here we have the first gospel account of Jesus visiting the temple. As you may recall in that story, Jesus was left behind in Jerusalem after his visit there with his parents for the Passover. He was only 12 years old. In Luke chapter 2, verse 46, we read, "Now so it was that after 3 days they found him in the temple, sitting in the midst of the teachers, both listening to them and asking them questions. And all who heard him were astonished at his understanding and answers." And as an adult, we see Jesus preaching and teaching in the temple. Turn with me to the book of Luke, chapter 21, verses 37 and 38. Luke 21, 37 and 38. "And in the daytime he was teaching in the temple, but at night he went out and stayed on the mountain called Olivet. Then early in the morning, all the people came to him in the temple to hear him." There are also multiple references to Jesus' purification of the temple courts on at least two different occasions. John 2 records this, as does Mark 11, Luke 19, Matthew 21. Turn with me to the account in Matthew chapter 21, verses 12 through 14. Matthew chapter 21, verses 12 through 14. "Then Jesus went into the temple of God and drove out all those who bought and sold in the temple and overturned the tables of the money changers and the seats of those who sold doves. And he said to them, 'It is written, my house shall be called a house of prayer, but you have made it a den of thieves.' Then the blind and lame came to him in the temple, and he healed them." Did a temple exist on the Temple Mount? Yes, absolutely. The biblical evidence in both the Old and the New Testament, along with archaeological evidence, proves this fact. But yet, the temple is gone. It's no longer there. So isn't this just a piece of land where the temple used to be? And it's been gone for more than 2,000 years. So why is this plot of land so important? It's important because of its religious significance throughout the ages, due to the Jewish concept of zones of holiness. The Holy of Holies was designated by God to be in a specific location. And now, in the 21st century, there is a strong push to build another temple on that site, the same location of the Holy of Holies, a new structure called the Third Temple. And Jewish law requires that the Holy of Holies be in exactly the same location. Where? There on the right there on the Temple Mount. Several years ago, during the Feast of Tabernacles, there was a group called Temple Mount Faithful that actually attempted to place a cornerstone on the Temple Mount, symbolic of being the first step of building the Third Temple. However, there were Palestinian threats of violence, and it brought about a ban by the Israeli authorities on the ceremony. But it wasn't the first time, nor would it be the last time, that this group would attempt to do this. There are a number of Jewish groups working toward the construction of an end-time Jewish temple, a physical third temple in Jerusalem on the Temple Mount. Their preparations are sincere, dedicated, professional, and very well-financed. They would begin building today if the political situation permitted it. There are groups in Jerusalem that are doing the preparatory work for the building of the third temple, including preparation of a line of priests, the priestly garments, the holy vessels, the altar, and the menorah are all being prepared by the Temple Institute in Jerusalem. They have even reproduced a copy of the Ark of the Covenant, even though they acknowledge that it cannot replace the original. It can't replace the original because it doesn't have what the original had in it. They're even working to genetically reproduce a red heifer. Now, why is a red heifer important? It's not the red heifer, it's the ashes of the red heifer are needed for the purification rites for the workers working in the temple. One other thing that some people have speculated is that some of the ashes of the last red heifer, the ninth red heifer, may be again buried there on the Temple Mount. And they're looking forward to the time of the coming of the 10th red heifer, which they believe will be needed for the purification rites, for the building of the temple, which is needed for Messiah to come. Will there be a third temple yet to be built? There are numerous references to an end-time altar and an end-time temple, including references in Daniel 9, Daniel 11, Daniel 12, Matthew 24, 2 Thessalonians 2, and Revelation 11. Let's read the reference in 2 Thessalonians 2, verses 3 and 4. Let no one deceive you by any means, for that day will not come unless the falling away comes first and the man of sin is revealed, the son of perdition, who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped, so that he sits as God in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. Is this a literal temple or is it figurative? There are many who believe that the third temple is literal and want to hasten its construction. And for many Jews, there's a very strong belief that the third temple must be built for Messiah to come. But how could this third temple ever be built? The Muslims wouldn't allow it. Yes, that's correct. Under the current state and circumstances, it would not be allowed. And before a third temple could ever be built, the exact location of the Holy of Holies would have to be determined. And that could only be done by archaeologists excavating the Temple Mount. Another thing the Muslims would not permit under the current circumstances. So how could this ever come about? Under the current circumstances, it's impossible. Not impossible, just impossible under the current circumstances. And as we've seen, the status quo has changed, sometimes rather remarkably, over the course of that 3,000-year history since the building of the first temple on this piece of earth we call Jerusalem and the building platform we know of today as the Temple Mount. And this flashpoint, centering on this very small piece of earth, 37 acres of holy ground over which battles have been fought and are yet to be fought, this site, which is not only historically significant, but will be battled once again as the location for the potential rebuilding of the temple. In conclusion, I'd like to read to you a reference of a prayer from the Jewish prayer book. It says, "Because of our sins, we are exiled from our country and banished from our land. We cannot go up as pilgrims to worship thee, to perform our duties in thy chosen house, the great and holy temple, which was called by thy name on account of the hand that was let loose on thy sanctuary. May it be thy will, Lord our God and God of our fathers, merciful King, in thy abundant love, again, to have mercy on us and on thy sanctuary, rebuild it speedily and magnify its glory." This is the second in a multi-series group of messages I have on the topic of Jerusalem. And I'll keep narrowing the focus: Jerusalem, the Temple Mount, the Temple, the Holy of Holies, and the Ark of the Covenant. Keep your eyes focused on world events and listen for news about Jerusalem and the Temple Mount. It's destined to become the center of events yet to come.